Welcome to Ballsy, the podcast where I interview successful artists and creators on how they got the balls to sell their art and turn their practice into a profitable business. As a former entrepreneur turned artist, I realized that being an artist is basically like running a small startup, and you, the artist, are the CEO. I talk to artists about their businesses, talk real numbers, growth hacks, tools and tricks, and how they were ballsy enough to make that their career. I still can't get used to like seeing myself all the time. So it's a, I normally wear my like cool glasses and I can't seem to find them anywhere. So I'm wearing my like regular nerd glasses.
I just found my cool glasses. You want to see them?
Everyone makes fun of me.
These are prescription. I got these years ago. I never wear them because they make me feel dizzy.
Then you shouldn't
like,
wear
it. But it does make like words look better. Like I feel like they work, but at the same time,
are they? Do you have a prescription, or are
no,
they like reading glasses?
They're prescription. Oh, I got them years ago.
They're dope brands.
I call them Jeffrey Dahmer glasses. But like angles, like my phone, the angles they don't look 90 degrees. It's very weird.
But I just
found them deep somewhere in the drawer.
Yeah, I'm new to glasses. Like, well, I've worn glasses for a while, but like now I actually need them. But I'm not prescription. I'm just reading. So I can't see shit in front of me. Like, I can't see my phone if I'm looking at it. It's just all blurry unless I have
like
glasses
right now,
on. So I wear.
Very, very blurry.
Yeah, like I can see you. Like, this is perfect. If I go like this, you're blurry. So, but such is life.
Such is life.
The disadvantage of getting older.
Where's Joe?
Who's Joe?
Joe Rogan. You said Joe Rogan was going to be here. Where is he?
Oh, yeah. He's not making it. He's not going to make it. He called. He canceled.
Just us? All right. Fuck it.
It's just us.
Let's do it.
So, everybody, welcome to Ballsy. It's a rebranding, baby. This is John Westbay. He definitely has the balls to sell some art. He is an artist from New York City.
Brooklyn, New York.
From Brooklyn. I'm going to, instead of me mastering it, why don't you give a little background on yourself? I always tell artists, start with your social media. So people, if they're listening, they can go search. The links will be in the notes, but the more chances people have, the better. So if you would tell a little about your style, I know the things you're known for, the characters you've created, and just give us a little background of how you got to where you are, and then we'll slowly get into the questions.
So social media is pretty simple. It's only Instagram. It's at Westgard, WESTGARD. The website is With Love by West. Not on TikTok, not on Twitter. I don't know how people have time for all these social media things. Instagram is enough for me. I already spent too many hours on it. But yes, John Westbay. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I tell people I'm from Brooklyn and they're like, but where are you born? Like they automatically assume that nobody's actually born in Brooklyn. Like people just move here from like Idaho or Iowa or these other places. But I was born here, still here representing, holding it down while everybody else is enjoying the heat in Florida and such, in Miami. But I'm a painter. So this year is actually exciting. This February will be 10 years since I started painting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm excited for that. Started as street art. I was painting on canvas first. I just grabbed some canvases, just started messing around. And I was always artistic, always in school. So I just did this interview for Inked Mag and it says, what was the first medium that you used? And I thought about it and I'm like, definitely ink on school desk, on public school desk or paper. Because I like always, from every age, from elementary school to middle school to high school, I just like recall being in class, not paying attention at all, being deep into some pen drawings, like ink all over this side of your hand, and the teacher coming over, grabbing it, getting compliments. It'd be like, very nice jump. It's not what we're doing. Snatch it away. Also, which is a message that I try to portray, but like them saying, you can't do this. This is cool, but this is never going to get you anywhere. And my biggest message, which I would want to share with the world, is that it is possible and you can do it. But we'll get back to that. Yeah, just from a kid, always drawing, always paintings. Always loved art class. Then I was like cutting hair, which was artistic in a way. But once I started painting, which was 10 years ago, I really fell in love. I had a business. I got out of my business. And I've really just been painting ever since.
Okay, so we're going to get into all that. Because one of the things that I always find the most interesting is like when artists turn pro. Like at what point did those inflection points happen? So I know your work of, I know you for two things. I know you for the love street art stuff. And then I know you for, I don't know how you describe your character. You got like these, just these eyes and a heart. And so those are, obviously love is a theme in your work. Can you give the audience just a quick evolution on how your work evolved? Because you're known for these things, and we're going to get back into the how that conveys to business and how you did that. And then we're going to go back to how you became an actual artist from having a hobby that was art.
So it, yeah, it really, I was just messing around on canvas. It was funny because when you get a can, when you get canvas and you get paint, you're like, I want to paint. And then you sit down and you're like, what the hell am I going to paint? You know, what, like that's, and that's what being an artist is, I guess, is just to have that freedom and the confidence to just try something and pick something, go for it. So I was just messing around, just making faces and different things, colors, flowers, just figuring out literally how to apply paint to a canvas, use it, how to use a paintbrush. And, but then, yeah, after a few months, I made this love thing. I was in the shower, and like in the steam of the shower, I just wrote the love, like script out. It's crazy, right? And they say ideas always come in the shower.
Mind is free, yeah.
It's not. Script L, and I use the heart as the O, and then V-E, and I'm like, I look to the heart, and I'm like, the heart kind of resembles a V more than an O, because you would see that a lot. You see it on Hallmark cards and everywhere, like the heart is the O, right? So then I rewrote it in the glass, script L, O with the heart as the V and then an E. And then I put the peace sign, and then I'm like, all right, this is pretty cool. And was really never into, I always loved graffiti. I always appreciated it, but I didn't like, that was my group of friends never really was into it. Like usually people get into that really young, like when they're a teenager, but I was 23. I was 23 and I grabbed spray paint and I was like, I like this thing. I think it's cool. I'm just going to freaking start spraying it everywhere. And I did like all over New York City, all over Brooklyn. Daily News did an article about it, like early on. I just started. I was like, and I look back at them now, they were so ugly. It was just so young. It was just, I didn't know how to use, I didn't know what spray paint to get. I got Rust-Oleum at a freaking Home Depot. I didn't know how to, I had no hand control. I had no, but there was something there, and it showed, and it resonated with people because it's very simple, but it resonated with people. So then I made an Instagram, which was anonymous, but and people would reach out. People would say, hey, could you do this for me on canvas? And I'm like, okay. And they're like, how much? And I'm like, I don't know. I never, ever thought that. I was just messing around. I just got canvas just to have some fun, and I started doing it in the street for fun. Never thought that I could use it and make money. But so the heart, to answer your question, the heart character now that I use, really, it did come from the love. I use the heart as the V in the word love, which was the street art stuff. And I would write phrases, love is all you need, stuff from song, whatever it is, more love and this and that. But so the heart character now that you see.
I got the toys. I should show you the toy.
I'm excited to talk about the toys. I'm excited. Because I just saw the toys, and I'm super excited to hear how that process came about.
It's cool to see it now. Like, I get to, let me grab one. I got to show you.
Okay.
It's cool to see it now coming from, like I said, 10 years, coming from like these very young, very premature, like spray paint drawings and with the heart, to now see this that I finally got, boom, in the box. Just got these a few days ago, didn't even ship them out yet. And now to see it like 3D.
Yeah, hold it up a little higher. Yeah, that's so cool, man.
And they're really heavy. They're like a pound and a half.
We're definitely getting back to those because I love that. I always think it's super interesting. There are a bunch of artists that I follow that have found that specific, and I think it's one of the more important things of art, because at the end of the day, as artists, your art style is your brand, right? That's who you are. And you've found this character and this, obviously based on love, but it's a brand, right? You take it everywhere. You do it on everything. And so one, conceptually, how that evolved from something so simple as like a love tag that then evolved into this character that has now become the thesis and underlying of your work, I think is really compelling. So before you were, but we're going to go back and then we're going to go forward. So before you were an artist, what'd you do? You briefly said hairstylist, but give us a little background.
So I was a barber. So while I was in high school, I just started cutting some friends' hair. It seemed like it was fun. I got to work with my hands. I always loved the barber in the neighborhood that gave the best haircuts. He was like so cool to me. And you go, we want to go to that guy and not like the other guy that's going to mess your hair up. And just the atmosphere of a barbershop, being in the barbershop, there would always be like, the older kids in the neighborhood, and they would be in there getting their haircuts. It would be a cool spot and new people. So I really liked that. And while I was in high school, I was just cutting my friend's hair, like in my house. And the week I graduated high school, I started working in a barbershop, worked there for 2 years in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. And then when I was 20, opened up my own barbershop, which I had for 10 years. I had until on the 11th year. I had it till last year, till 2021. So I was out of there already. I wasn't cutting hair. Yeah. But I still owned and operated it, which we'll get into that as well, because we'll get into that later. But that's what I was doing. So it was hands-on. I was working with my hands, and it felt artistic, and I loved it. When I did it, I was all in. I loved it. I was into the business, and I built the business. I designed it, and I built the business, and I loved what I did. But as soon as I started painting, and like the artistic freedom that I experienced without anybody telling me what to do, because everybody wants the same haircut. You have very little artistic freedom when you're cutting hair. It's already, you're stuck in the medium of hair. Plus everybody from the neighborhood wants the same haircut. You want a skin fade with the comb over, or a few years before that, it was like straight down with the box out. You know what I mean? So let me silence. I think that was you anyway, but let me silence.
That was me. But you started and ran a real business.
Yeah. So,
yeah, okay.
And as soon as I started painting, I didn't know how I would turn it into a business. It was not the plan at all, but I just knew that I needed to keep doing this. And
so you have a barbershop that you're running a business. You have probably making an okay income. At what point, obviously you got a couple of inquiries, sell art. At what point were you like, I could do this full time?
Maybe it was a long, I really can't think of one moment. It really was years of starting to think it was possible, and then just growing my confidence in believing in that and thinking that it was, and knowing that it was possible. It really did take years, but yeah, that first year selling pieces for 100, 200, 300 bucks. And then like, all right, I got to get up to $500, $1,000. And then I stopped cutting hair. So I opened up that barbershop in 2010. In 2015, I started painting in 2013. In 2015, I went on this trip to South Africa. It was like a volunteer trip. And I got to paint the big wall like for these kids in the township. It was really cool. And I came back from that trip and I was like, I'm willing to take a huge pay cut. I was not making the money in art yet that I was cutting hair. So cutting hair is super consistent. You're not going to get rich, but it's very consistent. You know what you're going to make, and it was good. But
everybody needs a haircut.
Everybody needs a haircut. But I came back from that trip, and they talk about travel is so important. And I'm not travel like Miami, LA, Vegas. Like that's different. I look at that like those trips for me are more like business. But I mean travel like the world and go to see how people live, like in Africa, in different places, different cultures, Europe and the Middle East, Asia. I came back from that trip and it just, I don't know, gave me a different, I was like, I can't spend any more time in this barbershop. I'll figure out how to make, the money will come. And that was it. I stopped cutting hair. I told all my people, I was like, it was two steps. At first I cut back from working full 5 days a week, probably 50, 60 hours. I cut down to like 20 hours. I just kept my friends. And then like a year after that, I was like, guys, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. So it was a gradual process, and it takes a leap of faith. But you do have to let that happen in time. I don't believe, if I were to give advice to somebody, I would say figure out how you need fuel. Yeah. So if you have this vision, if you know that you want to do something, but you're not making money in it yet, whether it's music or painting or something, and you need fuel. I look at it like that's a destination. You want to get there, but you need fuel to get there, and you have to fuel that. And I think it's important not to just cut everything out right away. So some people, they're scared to cut it out and they'll stay in that job forever, the 9 to 5. And that's not good. But on the other side of it, you don't want to just cut everything out and then it might stifle you. You need some fuel to get where you want to go. So I would say come up with a plan, which is what I did for that year, I guess, only working maybe 20 hours a week just to get enough money where I could like pay my rent, pay my car, pay my cell phone, and that was it. And then everything else you could figure out. But whether that's waiting on tables two nights a week, something where you could make money just enough to get by and it's not going to take too much of your time. And then you have your time to work on your craft when you go home at night or whatever it is. Again, painting, whatever your art is. But you need fuel to get there until you could take, and then you take, it doesn't have to be like you're making, you have a $150,000 job on Wall Street and then you just quit one day and then that was it. And then you go to zero and you only work on your art. If you could do that, great. If you have the confidence to take that leap, to go straight into the deep end, great. But mine was a little more, it was a little more thought out and gradual. Like I walked into the water on the shallow end and then I swam. And for me, however you get in the water, do it. But for me, that's how I did it.
Yeah, I've gotten in the water, got in the pool, and then got out of the pool, went back to getting some work, and then got back in the pool. I've done it a little piecemeal, but I think you're correct. Being funded correctly such that you have the ability to go through like a light spot or to finance like your big project ideas, whatever it might be, is super important. But in also in fairness, if you don't take that huge leap, if you don't burn the boats and take that huge leap, sometimes you don't get to that really creative place and you don't really achieve your goals. Like you can compress how you achieve those goals. So
100%. And I did.
All right. So now you're no longer cutting hair. You're now painting full time. So let's talk. I like to figure out where and how people make their money. So on the revenue side, what kind of work do you make? Do you make paintings? Do you make prints? Now you're doing sculptures. And what was the evolution of that work like?
So still a lot is private sales, which I've been lucky. The following has been, as I'm talking about, my leap of faith has been gradual. And like over a 10-year span, my following has been too. And they've grown with me. People from the street art, it built up like a real grassroots community that now has followed me and grown. But the main thing is canvas, of course. Canvas work, paintings. I have some galleries that I work with. I have some consultants that I work with that they sell for me privately to their collectors. And merch, clothing, sweatshirts, t-shirts, which I was skeptical to do for a while because I felt like, all right, I need to pick one lane and I need to... But if I do this, then it's going to water down my paintings. And if I'm going to be a fine artist, then I can't be making clothes and I can't be graphic designer, blah, blah, blah. But I give credit always to the guys. I think now more than ever, a lot has changed in the past 10 years through social media. The ability that we as artists have to sell direct to our fan base and build a fan base. And I look at guys like Obey and Cause and what's his name? Whoever these artists are that are doing it, that are in different markets now. Brent Estabrook, huge inspiration of mine. Victor Castillo and these guys.
He's great.
I love them. I have an original piece in there actually. Not an oil canvas. It's a little out of my price range. I inquired about one of those, but I have a work on paper, an original work on paper. Really cool. I'll show you before we hang up. But these guys that are doing... They're in different markets. There's this whole article I read, I think Time Magazine did it, about Cause and how he just broke down every barrier. He's in like every market. And he's successfully. In the past, you needed to be like a commercial artist or a fine artist or a clothing designer. And he's doing museum shows in the biggest museums in the world, the Brooklyn Museum. And he's also doing like a collab with Uniqlo, and they're selling $28 t-shirts with his art on it. And neither hasn't hurt each other because it's done right. And that's what I found is as long as I do everything and it's high quality and I do the proper research and development on each product, then I feel good about it. And I also feel good about having something in different price ranges because some of the people that have been following me for all these years, especially where I come from in Brooklyn, where I didn't know anybody that was a painter. I didn't know anybody that painted as a hobby, let alone painted for a career and was a career artist. So I care. I still care. As much as my main goal is absolutely progressing in the fine art space and getting great gallery representation that's going to bring me to the next level collector and raise the price of the canvases, I still care about offering a product to the people where I come from. People that are not in the market to spend $20,000 on a painting or $10,000 or even $5,000 on a painting, maybe this toy, to have a $200 item, or my prints, I sell for around $200. And then some people can't even afford those. And they'll, but I have a hoodie maybe for $80 or a t-shirt for $50, something. Yeah. And as long as they're really good quality and they're done right, I feel good about it. And
by the way, I think it's super smart. I fight with it all the time because we have like this, there was always this vision of, oh, artists don't do that. But now artists actually do that, right? There's a Murakami does it. Exactly. We can do it.
I was blanking right? on names, but there's so many names.
They're all of them.
Yeah.
And so we have this point in time, especially because you can get in front of your customer directly. And as you say, like the amount of people that can actually afford a $5,000 piece of art is just not that many. So it is to have something that's accessible, to have something that the average collector can get or the aspirational collector can get. I think you're absolutely correct, is super important. By the way, I love toys. I love small sculptures. I love all this stuff.
Thank you.
So of your stuff, what are the best sellers? What are the things that move the most of? Where do you focus your time on those things?
So this year I really want to focus on big scale paintings. I have some gallery representation now that I finally 10 years in, I've developed and have access now to work with people that I didn't in the past, and where they could, because that's a lot. It's a lot too. It's a lot to think of, to be. We have the possibility to do it now through social media, but it's a lot to be the artist, to be in your creative space and keep new paintings coming out, not just doing the same thing. Create the painting. Then I got to take a picture. You got to take a good picture of the painting. You want to try to get video of the process to show. It's all right. I got to get video while I'm painting. Let me get the video and set the camera up and whatever. Take a time. Or you finish the painting like, damn, I didn't get one picture. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
The video went out, but
yeah, you know, the video goes out. Don't worry about it.
And then it's okay. So then it's like painting it, being the artist, being the content creator of getting the pictures and the video, and then posting it on social media. All right, what's the good time to post it? When are you going to people be most engaged? Blah, blah, blah. And then try to sell it. And then communicate with people that are interested. Oh, and they ask about the price. And then you're negotiating price with them and trying to close the deal. There's many different jobs there.
So
what was your question? Now I'm drawing a blank because I'm looking at a black screen.
It's okay. It was a different question, but you actually put another question in my head, which is how much time do you spend actually making art versus all the other things you just talked about?
So this year I plan on, yes, more so. I guess that's how I got there. So I definitely paint. I don't know. I've really never counted the hours. I definitely paint, I guess, 30 to 40 hours a week. Like a normal job. I'll paint 5 days a week. But then all that other stuff is definitely, I feel like I'm always working. And it's funny because my friends with more traditional jobs will say, oh, whatever, laugh, you don't work. But I swear from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, I'm doing some form of work. If I'm not painting, I'm on talking to somebody about something, some deal, communicating, getting a deal done, sending it in something. But this year, yeah. I want to spend, I would say right now, maybe, I don't know, 60-40 painting versus everything else. But I want it to be like 80-20. I want it to be 80% painting, just time in the studio painting, creating, and then building a team is hard, but it's important. And I finally have great brokers, consultants that I work with to do the selling. I have a great person a friend that sends the invoices for me and does that, QuickBooks accounting. So that's important too, is building that structure where you could, you know, designate that work to the right people and you could just focus on your thing, because there's a lot of hats to wear. And in the beginning you don't have the funds to pay the teams. So you have to do everything and you have to balance it. But the goal is definitely, yes, I want to spend my time in the studio creating, thinking about that.
So it's amazing. You're actually asking and answering all my questions before I even get to ask them. So one of my key questions is, do you have a team? Which obviously the answer is yes. And at what point did you decide to get that team? Was it strictly financial? Was it that you found yourself not painting as much as you wanted to? And which parts of the team did you add first?
I'm gonna behave and I'm gonna answer your questions very directly from now on. So I don't want
to. I like it. I like that. I like that you're getting ahead of me. It's good.
Yes, I have a small team, and I'm very lucky. I have a lot of people that are very supportive. I have a girl that does, yes, the invoicing for me and all the billing. That's the last thing I want. That's, you have to think about, what is the first thing that you don't want? What's the last thing that you want to do? What's the first part that you want to cut out? What's your least favorite part? And
that's one of the most important lessons. As someone who used to work for me years ago, it's the ability to delegate and to realize what you're not great at and how to delegate that out quickly, because you doing it is even less valuable than someone else who's good at it doing it, right? Like, it's negative, not positive.
100%. And we have to think about that. And that's not an easy thing. And I think that's probably like top two or three like important things in all successful people, through no matter what the business is, the ability to like delegate, to build a team and delegate the responsibility and find the people and trust them, because it's not easy. It's hard.
So you put the bookkeeper up. Who is next?
Yes. Salespeople. I don't want to be the one closing the sale. It's not my thing. As a barber, I was never in sales. My brother is a salesman. He's great at it. That's what he does. I feel like you have that or you don't. It's not my thing. One thing I loved about cutting hair is that I did not have to be a salesman. People walk in the door. They know it. They know what they want. There's really nothing I can upsell you on. It's, you come in, the price is on the wall. I'm not trying to close like a big deal. Right. It's very opaque, like transparent. And I want to remove myself for years. I handled all of that. And people want to negotiate price and they don't want to pay the full price. And then you got to talk. And I don't want to do any of that. So I guess that would be the next thing.
Okay. So I'm going to stop you there, because I have the same, I'm a terrible closer. I'm an okay opener. I'm seven innings of the best middle relief you've ever seen, and I can't close to save my life. I'm going to follow up on this. So how did you go about finding salespeople, and what did you look for, and is that a full-time job? Is that someone who does it on the side? Do you get your inbounds and just forward it to them? What does that process look like?
So at first, it was a very good friend of mine who was like in between jobs. He's actually the friend when I started painting 10 years ago. It's because I was at his house and he was painting. He had these tiny little canvases, super artistic, very good friend, one of my best friends since we were kids. Very artistic, plays the guitar, amazing, could paint, could draw, could dance. And he was working on these little paintings. And I said, that's so cool. And that's when I went 10 years ago. I got some paint and I started painting. So I guess about 3 or 4 years ago, he was in between jobs. I said, hey, dude, I could use a hand. Work with me in the meantime. So it was not a full-time thing. It was like an hourly rate for everything that he did, plus a small commission for anything that he closed. And he also is, as being a very talented artist and all of those mediums, he is also was a salesman, worked sales jobs for many years. So he's good at that. So that's what it was for years. He just recently, he worked with me until earlier this year. He took a full-time job, National Grid. So now it is somebody that, it's a similar thing, but it's not a friend. And they work specifically in this space, selling art. They sell other people's art, not only my art.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like an individual that reps a bunch of artists and sells their work.
Yes. Yeah. She has worked with galleries. She's worked in museums, and she's great. Working with her has been really good. And that's her specialty. It was great working with him, but if you could find people that's really their specialty. And again, you don't have access. Like in the beginning, you got to do it yourself. And then I guess that's like the natural progression, doing it yourself. And then maybe finding someone else where they can do it. And then eventually you want to have the best social media people in the world to just let them do their thing. You want to have the best gallery representation in the world. And you could, but you have those steps to get there. But
they don't give those jobs out to everybody, because there's a reason. But the controlling your own sales process and having your own salespeople, like even myself, God, would I love to hand that off to somebody.
Yeah.
I'm still in the phase of, I'm still behind where you are. So I'm still trying to figure all those things out. And once again, to have someone who you can hand that off to, it also, I think, gives the artist more of an allure, right? Oh, I'm not dealing with the 100%. Transaction. And it separates you from you, which lets the person be harder in price.
Yes.
Because you're there's not the emotional connection. You don't feel like you have to make the sale. There's none of that. So I think those are all like super positive. Congrats for making that happen.
Thank you. And I guess the biggest difference is she's also bringing people to the table, because you don't just want to hand it to anybody. And again, no. The steps, great. He was handling everything that came in. Yes, the email was him. It would on my website and on my Instagram page, the inquiry emails would go directly to him, or anybody, if they were to text me, or I would just hand it off to him, which I still do sometimes with her, but also she brings her own people. So that, I guess, is the biggest difference, because you also don't want to delegate and just hand unnecessary money to people if they're not bringing their value. So if she is also not only getting, yes, things that I hand her, she has collectors that she works with. She has a mailing list and people that she reaches out to personally, collectors that she works very close with and knows their style, knows, oh, this person might like this piece. Let me send this to them. And
can build your collector base and make because your collectors are obviously important. So the better the collector, the better you, like it all goes.
Of course.
Where does most of your inbound traffic come from? Does it come from Instagram? Does it come from the website? Does it come from third party? Does it come from gallery? Like, where do you find, is it evenly spread?
I would say absolutely Instagram. Everybody talks shit about Instagram. I do myself too. I post sometimes about it. We all talk about how Instagram is horrible and it's toxic, and of course all that stuff is true. So we saw the social dilemma, we saw it on Netflix, but it's a tool. And another thing is, people complain so much about their Instagram feed, but it's like the one source of media where we have not 100% control, and especially not now the way the algorithm is and it pushes certain things, but we could control, like, I don't know, 85 to 90% of what we're taking in based on who we follow and the things that we like. And we'll still complain about it, but people will sit in front of a TV and where they have no control, the commercials that they get, it's all like pharmaceutical drugs and car sales and all this bullshit. And they won't complain at all because they'll just accept that. But then they'll complain about social media. 100% social media has been, I should be getting paid by Instagram for defending them. Mark's got to cut the check. But it has 100% been the biggest tool for me to be able to make that step, to have to from zero to a certain point. It can only bring you so far, because the goal is still making the right connections in the art world, proper gallery representation. But to connect, of course, even the sweatshirts and stuff, the website, if I were just to sell things directly on the website without posting on Instagram, not many people are seeing it. The Instagram drives people to the website. Boom, the drop is happening today at 12 p.m. will be available from Instagram to the website. So I feel like, of course, it has its shitty sides, but it's a tool. And if you want it to be some kind of creative or build your own business or work for yourself, whatever it is, utilize it. Utilize it the best you can. Unfollow whoever or mute people that if you don't want to see their bullshit and you don't want it to be a negative thing. Look, I really follow other artists, creatives, family members that I keep, not immediate family members, but other ones where I can keep in touch with, where I otherwise wouldn't see what's going on in their life. And creatives and cool pages where I could seek inspiration and see what artists are doing and keep up. And that's it. And
Yeah, I'm also super positive on Instagram. It's helped me substantially more than it's ever hurt me.
Yeah.
Are you rep by the galleries you're rep by? Are they New York based, or do you have different ones in different geographic locales? And how did you go about, like, how did they find you, or did you find them? What was your process?
I guess half and half. So I don't work exclusively with any galleries. They're all just pretty open. The furthest is in Dubai, Belvedere Art Space. Yeah, got that through a friend, through Flory, who I think he's been working with them for a while. He made the connection. They were interested in a collab piece that we did together. And then through there, I developed a relationship with them and have been working with them directly. They've been great just to get that. I'm excited every time I'm able to send them out. I take the canvases off of the stretchers when I send it to them and roll it up. But every time I send it, I'm just excited, because I would never be able to get my work in front of anyone's eyes on that side of the world through my Instagram or through any galleries here that I have. So that's always exciting. And that's definitely a goal, is to expand in other places, like into Europe, into Asia. I actually just got an email today from about a gallery representation in Asia. I haven't even responded to it.
That's awesome.
I'm prioritizing this podcast, Balls Podcast.
Let's go.
Over that. But so that's exciting.
It'll make you look coy and like you're so busy that you can't you can't get to them.
Yeah. And then others reached out to me. Hayes Gallery in Greenwich, Connecticut reached out to me. Gallery 23, who I've done the two solo shows with here in New York this year and last year, reached out to me. And yeah, it's building up to that point. It's there, and there are galleries now that I have my eyes on where I know that I can't only wait to see who's going to come to you, who's going to knock on your door. You have to, but you have to be ready, and you have to feel confident when you approach, when you solicit, and you have to, you don't know how to do it. And it's still, it's hard. It's intimidating. It's sure. Not easy. It's probably the hardest part of bridging that gap and getting to that next level. And of course, if there's a personal, somebody that knows somebody there, connection, that's the strongest, that's the best way to make it happen. If you have that, and if not, it's tough, but you got to ask them what their process is, what their artist submission process is, and follow it. Don't just walk in there with, hey, this is my artwork, and take a look at it. It could really rub them the wrong way if they're there at that moment to sell, not to be sold. So you ask them how somebody submits, and yeah. And you
okay, warm intro, and if not, just go through the process and let the work speak for itself.
Yeah, and I'm being ready. There's galleries that I've been looking at for years where it's, damn, I would love to be in this gallery, but I just didn't feel that my work was ready. I felt like my work's not good enough yet. And I think you gotta be real with yourself. And there's definitely a balance of being confident and believing in it, but also being real. And if you're a year or two in, and you gotta know, maybe, you know, is my work really as strong enough as everything else that's in this gallery? I love this gallery because of the work that they show, the artists that they show are experienced, decorated artists who have it down. Are my pieces at that level yet? Or am I just asking to be, is it unrealistic for me to ask? And if you're not there yet, then work, then how are you going to get there? And that's just being in the studio, spending hours. And that's one thing I credit. I'm probably going to answer another question, but that's one thing I credit martial arts training through. So I train jiu-jitsu, which is another thing I'm very passionate about. And just seeing there's the hours in there that you go show up, and there, it's easier to see, to materialize the progress and to see it like, wow, through the belts, and you get promotions with the belts, and just seeing where you stack up against the other people that are in there. And you, it's easy to see that growth is almost impossible not to happen if you put in the hours. And then you could apply that to other things. And I apply that to painting, just being in the studio more hours, putting in more hours. And since I could see it, it's so visible. And it's so evident, the more hours I spend, when I go from that year where I'm bullshitting and I'm painting maybe 15 hours a week to the year when I'm like, all right, I got to be in the studio. I'm going to paint 40 hours a week now. That growth in that time, it's not about years that you paint, right? Because you could paint for 20 years a few hours a day. But if you could do more actual hours in the studio in 2 years, if you're really in there, and the growth, it's about the hours in the studio, not about the time that passes in between jujitsu.
By the way, it's good to know you, but you are correct. You now asked the hobbies question. But the idea of that, you're correct, which is the doing the work, right? If you do the work, you get results. You don't do the work, you get what you get. I want to circle back for a sec just because I'm really curious of how you did it. So when did you decide to make a toy? And what was the process to making a toy? Because I see more and more artists getting, there's obviously big sculptures, and then there's like the kind of the toy market. I actually think the toy market's more compelling. How did you do it?
I have a big one coming, 48 inches. So it's going to be the same one.
Oh, that's big.
48. Not, you make things way bigger than that.
Yeah. What does that sell for? And how did you go about making it?
So this sells for 180 bucks.
Okay. So it's not expensive.
So with shipping, I would have loved to ask you. What would you think? What would you think I would sell it at?
As your first toy, I think that's a nice fair price. You'll sell a lot of them at that price, right? I would think.
Shipping and everything, like $200.
Yeah,
But to some people, they're like, a toy, $200 for a toy?
No, but you have cause toys that are $5,000. Like it's.
But he, in his primary market, he's only at $200. I bought some recently. I have them on the shelf over there. If you could catch the primary market, it's hard. You got about a 4-minute window once he makes the drop. But if you could catch it on the primary market, $200. Resale is a different.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize they were. I didn't realize the originals were that cheap.
Yeah. For this size, for the small ones.
Oh, okay. So but, I think that's. So how did you go about that part? Like, when did you decide, I need to make a toy of this? And then what was your process to actually go hunt down the manufacturer? And like, how did you go do it?
So I would be lying if I said that he wasn't a huge inspiration on this project specifically. It may be my whole career, but in this project specifically, I'm a huge lover of his toys. The way that they feel, how matte they are, the quality on them, you know.
They look like a real thing. They look very finished and professional.
These?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about his work. Cause definitely was, yeah, a big inspiration for me to make these. But just, yeah, to do something. So one thing, I just like working in different mediums. As much as I talk about putting in the hours in the studio, that also gets a little like lonely and a little boring. I love what keeps me like excited is working in new mediums, like clothing design, making the shoes that will be taking pre-orders for next week. That's been a year process.
Cool, by the way.
Thank you, man. Working with resin, working on canvas, working, I noticed it works on paper for the first time at that show, the recent show I did, like tattoo themed, and applying it to different mediums. I just made a rug. I'm waiting for the rug to come in. Like,
oh, yeah.
Forget the name of it, but like design stuff like that. And I love learning the process, learning the limitations. What is, how does this work? What are we limited to? Can this work? No, this can't work because you can't do this screen printing. You're limited to certain colors and you can't have gradients. And then I just love to learn all of these different processes. It keeps it fresh and exciting for me. At the end, of course, I still love to the most of the time to be in there painting on canvas. But if I'm working for a show, I might be in there for 3 months, 50 hours a week, every single day, work on the canvases. When that the work for that show is done, I might not want to paint for two or three weeks. And I need projects like this to work on. But this was a drawing. I made a 2D drawing.
Okay.
I found a manufacturer online.
U.S. or Asia?
Asia.
Yeah. Everything.
I'm super happy with the quality.
And did you design the packaging or did they?
I designed the packaging, even that part, sending the template and then filling out, okay, this, you know, designing a 3D thing where, and you're not seeing it in 3D.
It looks very finished.
It's really, and this is the underside that it comes in.
How many did you have to make?
100.
That's it?
I could have made less. I could have made 50. I mean, the price goes up, but I could have made 50. Yeah.
Interesting. And is there good margin on these, or are these more for exposure, or it's like a couple bucks?
No, the margin's pretty good. The margin's okay. Pretty good. Yeah.
And like how the big one, the 48-inch one, how many of those did you have to make? And is that the same supplier? Or is
same
it?
Supplier.
Okay.
So
it's going to weigh a ton.
It cannot be. If it was equivalent, so this, it's going to be a different material. If it was equivalent, this thing would be literally a ton. So we cannot do that. But yeah, just work. When they send you the template for the box, you're seeing it flat. Right? You see this thing like as if it were completely opened up. So it's hard to think about, okay, this is going to be the top and this is going to be the sides. And to try to like that is exciting for me. It's fun. And I think I did a pretty good job. I love the way it looks. This side is hand marked because it's one box and I had the two different colors. So
yeah,
watch the color and the number of 50. Boom, this on the front, the with love on the sides.
No, it looks super professional.
Floating hearts on the side. I'm very, very happy with the quality.
And how long did that take you to, like from beginning to end, how long did that take you to actually execute?
I think we started talking in like the springtime, almost a year.
Okay. So it's not a quick project.
No, it's because first of all, communicating with Asia is hard because it's 12 hours difference. And when I'm going to bed, they're waking up. So rarely is there a direct communication. Sometimes 10 p.m., it's 10 a.m. for them. So you could have like back and forth direct. And then, of course, there's the language barrier and waiting for a sample. I have to see one. This, the first sample comes and you get it. And it's like, all right, well, I want to change this and this. And you have to pay for each sample. Wait for the second sample to come. Then that each sample takes maybe 4 weeks to produce and then 2 weeks to get here. So each sample it's a month and a half in itself. And then I, it's not like I get it and I'm like, all right, I need to make this change. And then I tell him, and then it's exactly 6 weeks. Then it's weeks of communication again, and then the 6 weeks again. But again, and I had somebody handling that. I was communicating with my person here, and they were doing the communicating with them because it became a lot. But it's fun. It's fun for me to, this is only the first one. I plan on doing more, and it brings it into it. I just love to see this thing that I created in new mediums. As much as I love, my main thing will always be painting on canvas, fine artist. I love to see this character that I created on a shoe, on the side of a building, in 3D form, in sculpture, in a toy, in a carpet, in a rug. I would love to see in a wallpaper someday, like really nice, high-end wallpaper interior design.
Curious to see what it does in terms of opening doors, because there's like that whole toy world. There's a whole world that exists around this type of stuff of like art toys. And so I have a feeling it will open up a bunch of really interesting doors for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. Already, yes. That is how this thing started. So a toy company, a toy store, like a small boutique custom toy store reached out like maybe a year ago. And then that's how I found these people, the manufacturers to make it. They sell like custom stuff. They said, hey, are you interested? We work with fine artists. Are you interested in, we're doing a show, we'll send you some toys. They sent me like these brick walls. So it's like the same kind of material. The brick walls maybe about this size, and then we could paint. So you do like a mural on this mini brick wall, and then they sell those brick walls. So getting into, yeah, there's so many different avenues, but that is how it started. And then yes, this I'm sure will get me further into that space, and I'm excited. I love all these spaces. I love the interior design. I love toys. I love sneaker culture. I love tattoo culture. I love almost all of it. There's one portion of it I don't love so much, but I don't even know if I should say that or not. I don't know if I should shit on a whole sector, but
I'm gonna leave the witness already.
If you ask that question later, I'll let you ask it, but I'm not just gonna shout them out for no reason.
I'm gonna guess it's digital art. It's the one thing I didn't ask about, so it's for sure, and you didn't mention, so it's got to be NFTs.
Doesn't, again, I talk about the excitement that I have when I get like, wow, I get to freaking, and it's, sometimes I'll get stressed out, right? Because we get caught up in the moment and we're like, oh, this is stressful. Things don't always go easy. And then I zoom out. I'm like, I'm so lucky. And I get to the problems that I have, they're trivial, and I will take my problems any day of the week, because I get to design a table, I get to make paintings, I get to design a toy, I get to design shoes, and I'm excited about those things. I'm not very excited at all about digital art. What is exciting about that? I'm sorry.
Oh, by the way, I spent 6 months working on an NFT project that went nowhere, and I was early, and I somehow still missed apes. So trust me, there's no one more bitter about the space than
God
me.
Bless.
And like, Discord sucks. Like, spending your life on Discord is no way to live through life. So I'm with you 1,000%.
And then I've been approached by dozens of people about doing these, and I've entertained them, and some of them have gotten so far. I attached the physical print that I sold. It came with an NFT, a free NFT. The NFT part was free with the physical print. That's as far as I went. But they're like, yeah, we got to spend time on Discord. You got to interact with these people. Oh, and I'm like, I'm not doing it. I don't care. I don't care what size paycheck there might be on the other side of this. I'm not going down that road.
You're smart. Do what you love.
I have to enjoy it. That is the main reason. And that is why I'm so lucky we're so lucky that we get to do what we enjoy doing. And I am sure that there are a lot of people that are very enthusiastic about it, and they're happy to be in that space, and they want to work in that space, and it's exciting to them. God bless those people. I'm sure there are more people that are only in it for the wrong reasons, just to make money and whatever weird shit goes on with the NFTs. Fuck those people. But for the people that are really enthusiastic about it, and that's their medium, digital art.
Yeah, for sure.
Amazing. Push their boundaries, create it, push the space. I hope it grows. I hope that the real people that are in it for the right reasons, digital artists, animators, I hope that they are able to thrive in that market, and it lasts for a long time for them. I'm just not that interested in it.
It's okay. I get it. A couple more questions. We're getting close to the end. We always do these for about an hour. bunch of questions we'll have to do at the second interview. But the first one, do you have a mentor or a coach or someone that you like follow that like you, that whose career you're like, that's what I want to emulate? Or have you made your own way the whole time?
So good question. There's definitely the artists that I look at. There's like the traditional artists, of course, that I love. And then there are the contemporary artists that I look at their careers and they really help. They help me see what's possible and what I, and that I can get into these different markets and do them right and still be successful in all of them. The Cause, the Takashi Murakami and the Shepard Fairey and the Tristan Eaton and the Brent Estabrook, Victor Castillo, Pardo Cobra. And then personally, Flory, who we are from the same neighborhood in Brooklyn, but he's 7 years older than me or so, didn't know each other from childhood. He moved out of the neighborhood. We connected through Instagram to I think it was like 10 years ago. It was right when I started painting. He wasn't even really painting yet. He was making clothes. We connected just through because his clothing was very like art-based. He was drawing the designs. And then he quickly, shortly after that, stopped making the clothing, started painting on canvas. And he just really took it to another level. The laser focus that kid has really helped me see what is possible if we put that work in. Because again, it's before you could put that work in, you have to know what's possible a little bit. Someone has to show you that like this is possible. And you got to think that you got to know that there's a path there to be taken and to see.
Yeah, and seeing someone from the neighborhood is always it can be done.
And just to see the things that he has achieved because he was lit from back then. So I guess like maybe that, let's say that first year he was making clothes. And then, so let's say 9 years now, it's been laser focus on fine art and painting. Not really, he didn't have a barbershop that he was working on and worried about. And I was also younger. I was just the life, running around chasing girls, drinking, partying, which I really don't do anymore at all. I don't really go out anymore. But to see the progress that can be made when you are laser focused, it showed me like, okay, wow, if I could get that. And also different because he enjoys really spending all of his time painting, working on canvas. He's more of a traditional painter. The career's path is a little different because I do working in these different mediums. I like the toy design, the clothing design, and just being able to apply my thing, my brand to different mediums, but still having that laser focus, yes, in all of them and seeing what's possible. And because it's amazing where he is now. And I believe he will go even further. And I thank him for helping blaze that trail. Somebody from the same neighborhood. Again, we didn't know anybody that there was no, we come from neighborhood. There's cops and firemen and sanitation workers. And if you're an entrepreneur, you got a local restaurant or you're selling drugs. And that's, so I thank him for it. It started as a friendship and it still is, but he just elevated so quickly and so efficiently that it became more of a mentorship over the years. So I appreciate that. And this one that I have on the table here, I'm sending out to him.
So my last questions, because we're coming to the end of the hour, we're actually even a little over, and that I ask all the artists is, what was your biggest three questions. One, what was your biggest mistake that you wish, God, if I could do this over, I wouldn't do it? And so far, what do you think what your greatest achievement was?
I guess the greatest achievement is staying in the water, like we spoke about. Staying in the water, like you mentioned, getting in and getting it. And everybody's journey is different, but it's been gradual. But I've stayed in the water the whole time. And there was times when it wasn't easy. There was times when it seemed the roller coaster that you'll go on if you take this path. There's highs and lows. And sometimes you feel so good. And you're like, all right, I see it. And this is so possible. And I feel so good. I'm so optimistic. And then there are times on the other side of that, on the other side of that coin, on the downswing, where it seems impossible, and it just want to give up. And a lot of people do. And it was funny going this year to Basel and going to like more beginner fairs spectrum and seeing the artists that are at their own booth and seeing like this look of, I went and I was like on the last day. And I know that there's people that put all their work in a U-Haul and went there. And I know that feeling, spending this money on a booth. They probably got like almost every dollar that they had put it together to get that booth, and you're not selling. And this look of someone walks by, you pick your head up a little bit and then they keep walking. And I know that feeling. And I guess what I'm most proud of is staying in the water. I have never stopped for 10 years. The biggest mistake, I guess, would be not being maybe too gradual and not putting my foot on the gas faster. So I ultimately, the barbershop closed. I wasn't cutting hair for years, but I was still managing it. And it took some mental space in my mind. And it also kept me so complacent, like, financially speaking, because I had money coming in pretty steady, so I didn't have such a fire. The barbershop only ultimately closed year 11. I renovated it in the 10-year anniversary, and then the next month COVID was shut down. So that, and it felt shitty when it happened, but that is really when I went 100% in. And the growth in these past 2 years has been, I, you know, I wish I did it earlier. I wish I,
right, because you're 100% focused. You get a lot of shit.
And again, I wish I hit the gas earlier, but at the same time, you have to see it to be able, you can't have your foot on the gas if the windshield is foggy. You have to, because you're probably going to crash. You have to defog the window first, and then you can hit the gas. So I'm just grateful now, yeah, where it feels pretty clear, and I see it. I see the path, and I got my foot on the gas.
Awesome. Any advice you'd give to up-and-coming artists that are just starting a journey?
Make the plan. Figure out what it is you want to do and figure out how you're going to get the fuel to get there. Maybe that is something where you don't have to trade so much of your time. Bartending two nights a week or waitering, whatever it is. Delivering pizzas. Figure out, okay, these minimum hours, I need to sacrifice 12 hours to work a week, and that's going to give me just the fuel. And on all of my off time, I'm not going to party so much. I'm not going to go out and blah, 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 and do all these things. There's always a reason if you want, if you let there be, there's always a reason to go have a drink and to go give into the resistance, as Stephen Pressfield would say. Do the work on those other hours. Do your work and yeah, make a plan. Believe in it and really believe in it. And it's not so easy. You can't just say, all right, I believe in it. And you have to really feel it. And that takes time, but hours, put the hours in. And once you start to see, it's almost impossible if you're putting the hours in to not have growth and to not see the growth. And once you start to see that growth, you realize just keep doing it and there will be more of it. And at some level, it really is almost even more simple than we make it think sometimes in our head. So get in the water, believe in it.
And on that note, we are going to, there's no better way to finish with the hard work. Yeah, this was a fantastic interview. I look forward to going back. There's a bunch of good quotes in here that I can't wait to pull out.
I'm going to hate all of them. I hate hearing my voice so much. I don't even know how to look at them. Send them to me.
It's going
to
be good stuff.
I'm going to, yeah.
So make sure you, was going to say, there's going to be a lot of good stuff. I'm super excited for the shoes coming. Just tell everybody again where to find you.
At WestGard on Instagram, WestGard, with love by West.com. Right there.
And everyone get out, get some toys if there are any left by the time this airs. By the time this airs, there might be some sneakers available, which looks super dope.
Thank you, man. Excited for those.
Anyhow, what a great interview. I look forward to keep watching your career. I've watched it for a while, and like, it's nice to know the backstory behind
it. Cool. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the time. And yeah, I'm not going to want to listen back because I hate hearing my voice back, but I'm happy to do it. All right, brother.